the most severe punitive measures ever taken against the nation. That's how Iran's president described U.S. and European unilateral sanctions on Tehran over allegations it's pursuing a nuclear weapons program. These charges Iran has persistently denied, citing a lack of evidence to the contrary, despite years of inspections. On this edition of News Analysis, we're looking at how Iran is responding to the actions of countries it says that are standing against the Iranian nation.
Iran flexes its military muscle. The country's armed forces have test-fired a new ballistic missile capable of hitting enemy radar systems and missile shields thousands of kilometers away.
So far, the pre-planned stages of the Great Prophet 7 drills have all been carried out successfully. Missiles have been launched from across the country, and many of them have hit the targets.
The drills come as Iran's parliament plans to debate a bill on blocking the strategic Strait of Hormuz in response to unilateral Western sanctions against Tehran. The bill obliges the government to stop oil tankers from shipping crude to countries that have imposed anti-Iran sanctions through the strait. Some 100 MPs have signed the draft bill. The U.S. and the European Union have imposed sanctions on Iran's oil sector, and just recently the EU halted oil imports from Iran. They say the move is meant to put more pressure on the Islamic Republic to give up its nuclear energy program. Western countries, particularly the U.S., have also threatened Iran with military action frequently. Tehran says it will never give in to pressure and intimidation because its nuclear energy program is peaceful and is within the framework of international laws. The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, has issued several reports on Iran's nuclear energy program. All the reports have confirmed the non-diversion of the Iranian nuclear energy program toward military purposes. As for sanctions, Iran says they are as ineffective as always. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has said the country must stand up to the punitive measures and powerfully overcome them. Meanwhile, Tehran has frequently warned against any military adventurism by the U.S. and its regional protege, Israel, saying it will give a devastating response to any aggression.
Well, joining me now live from Tehran is Mr. Mohammad Marandi, professor of the University of Tehran. Thank you very much, Mr. Marandi, for being with us.
Thank you.
I'd also like to welcome our guest from London, Jim Brann with Stop the War Coalition. Thank you very much, Mr. Brann. My first question to our guest in Tehran, Mr. Marandi. Iran, as you know, has called the U.S. and the European sanctions illegal and unilateral. What are the grounds on which Iran is dismissing these sanctions as illegal?
Well, first of all, most importantly, the embargo that has been imposed by the United States on the Iranians is directed at third parties. The Iranians really have no problem at all having no deals with the United States. The Iranians have not had any significant economic relationship with the United States since the revolution itself. But what the Americans have been doing is that they've been bullying independent countries to prevent them from purchasing Iranian crude oil, as well as from investing in the Iranian oil and trade sector. And they've also imposed, along with the Europeans, forms of an embargo, as well as severe limitations on the Iranian central bank. So the objective, basically, while many of these acts are very much illegal in accordance to international law and including the rules of the World Trade Organization, but also in the eyes of many, they constitute an act of war, as the U.S. presidential candidate Ron Paul has said, and so have many other analysts. The objective is not the Iranian nuclear program. Even in the past, before the more severe sanctions were imposed, when one looks at the WikiLeaks documents, it was quite clear that from the very start, the objective was to hurt ordinary Iranians. And in the eyes of people in Iran, these actions are themselves quite despicable, because hurting people and trying to prevent them from obtaining medicine and other necessary goods because of the restrictions on the central bank is a major violation of human rights. But again, I think Western countries are doing themselves a major disservice because people across the region and beyond see the Western regimes for what they really are. Just as in the past, they've supported Saddam Hussein and helped him obtain weapons of mass destruction, yeah, and aided him in his war against Iran, they continue to do so in a more silent method by embargoes and sanctions.
Well, let's bring in Mr. Jim Brand now on this. Mr. Brand, according to the Westerners themselves, specifically speaking here, the U.S. and its European allies, the sanctions imposed are meant to force Iran, they say, to limit its nuclear program. The question is, before we discuss whether that is going to happen, why should Iran be limiting its nuclear program when it says there's no proof of it developing nuclear arms? There is no evidence to suggest that.
I think legally the situation is quite clear that 38 years ago Iran signed the safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency regarding Iran's declared nuclear facilities. And for 38 years the IAEA inspectors have been visiting those declared nuclear facilities to ascertain whether there has been any diversion to military purposes. And for 38 years, those same inspectors have declared that there has been no diversion to military purposes. And that's the legal side of the process that's going on. On top of that, they have imposed a process for which I suggest there is no legal basis whatsoever, whereby, for example, the Security Council of the United Nations mm-hmm. has instructed the International Atomic Energy Agency, at the same time as considering the matters related to the safeguards agreement, to also to consider completely separate matters for which there is no kind of agreement, and I suggest there is no kind of power has ever been given either to the Security Council or to the, for example, the Secretary General of the IAEA. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a matter of world significance whether Iran complies with these additional demands or not, because it imposes a completely new order on the world if the Security Council can be used in this, I would suggest, illegal way. Mm-hmm. So Iran is quite correct to pursue its what's called its inalienable rights, yeah, to the full use of nuclear power for peaceful purposes.
Right. Well, let's now just look at what Iran is doing in terms of its responding to these sanctions that started on Sunday. Mr. Marandi, as you know, the oil embargo. Right now we have, of course, the three-day military drills that's taking place in Iran. And I have a quote here by a senior Iranian military official, Major General Shirazi. He described these drills as Iran's response, he said, to countries that stand against it. So basically this is clearly a message to the sanctions, as well as the bill that's been discussed in Parliament, you may already know, about shutting down the Strait of Hormuz. Now, how serious do you think that response is going to be, and what will ensue if actually Iran does take that step?
Well, since the Iranians view the United States and the Europeans as moving well beyond international norms and breaking international law at many levels, and the fact, and since these countries are very much trying to hurt ordinary Iranians, the Iranian government and the state and the armed forces feel the need to show Western powers that escalating the situation could definitely have consequences. At the moment, the Iranians are not planning to shut down the Strait of Hormuz, but I think the Iranians are pointing out that they do have that capability. And beyond that, even if there is any form of military conflict in the Persian Gulf region, it's definitely not just the Strait of Hormuz that will see a major Iranian military presence. Throughout the Persian Gulf region, the Iranian armed forces and the Indian Ocean, they have a very strong presence. And so if there is conflict between Iran and another party, obviously oil installation, gas installations, tankers, all of these will be destroyed, and nothing, there will be really nothing left to actually travel through the Strait of Hormuz, whether it's open or not. So I think the Iranians are trying to send the message to Western regimes that they should be concerned about escalating the situation further. And also the Iranians have additional options in the sense that they are allowed within the framework of international law to carry out stop and searches in the strait and near the Strait of Hormuz, because it is Iranian territorial waters. And they could, through using international law, that could severely restrict the pace at which tankers and other ships pass through the strait, and that would decrease, again, the pace of exports of oil to international markets. So the Iranians have many legal options that they can use in response to what they see as illegal actions taken by Western governments.
Right. Let's go to Jim Brown on this now and refer to some of the information that we've been getting about what is actually going on in the Persian Gulf region. Jim Brown, we're hearing that the U.S. is moving military reinforcements into the Persian Gulf region. We want to know what basically this is about. I just want to quote here, the U.S. Navy, according to one report, moving a converted amphibious transport and docking ship known as the Ponce into the Persian Gulf, the report says, to serve as the Pentagon's first floating staging base for military operations, as well as reports of the U.S. increasing the number of fighter jets that are capable, the report says, of striking Iran. So do you think the U.S. is actually seriously considering military action when it comes to Tehran's issue?
I think in if you look at the thing overall, then certainly the United States presidents, both Bush and Obama, and many other top officials have constantly repeated in their favorite phrase, all options are on the table. It has to be pointed out that that even theoretically includes nuclear attack on Iran. That's also if all options are on the table. But certainly the use of armed force, they have explicitly said, yes, they will keep that option on the table. And they are quite serious, because that is their, as they see it, their trump card. On the other hand, they know very well indeed that it's, for example, it's 10.5 years since President Bush gave the Axis of Evil speech, in which he said that the issue was to deal with Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. And they know perfectly well the disaster that they faced in Iraq. What they hoped for in Iraq certainly didn't happen. So that, and they certainly didn't mean to wait 10.5 years. So they well understand the dangers. They know that for them there are dangers at every turn, mm-hmm. but no, they haven't ruled out. They certainly haven't ruled out the military option. Although I suggest these latest moves are probably a bluff,
right.
because they keep saying that sanctions are the thing for the moment.
Mm. And on that note, I'm just hearing that joining us now from Chicago in the U.S. is Stephen Lenman. He's a writer and a radio host. Mr. Lenman, thank you so much for being with us. And you did get into the program at a very critical time when we are speaking about what the U.S. is going to do on Iran when it speaks about, of course, a military attack. Is it going to turn into action? First of all, I'd like to put forward to you what the reports are saying about the White House position. Talks and at the same time sanctions and threats. What the White House is calling the two-track approach. Why would Obama basically believe that Iran will give in when it's facing threats, sanctions, even a cyber attack? That's allegedly taking place by the U.S. And supported by Israel. Is the U.S. even serious about negotiations? And if it isn't, does that mean that it is serious about a military attack?
Well, I can't say whether a military attack will come or not. What's going on could be saber-rattling. It's been going on for years, but there's no question that America has a long-standing policy to remove all independent regimes. The so-called Iranian nuclear threat is a red herring. U.S. intelligence, IAEA inspectors have confirmed that Iran's nuclear program is perfectly legitimate. There's nothing illegal about it. It's used as cover. They can have repeated talks, negotiations. They'll get nowhere, not because the other European countries don't want them to resolve things. It's because Washington is the roadblock. But whether there'll be a war or whether it's coming imminently, I don't know. You need to separate the rhetoric from the saber rattling in the Gulf, which is the military buildup. A lot of reports floating around now that America has beefed up its military strength even more in the region. Mm-hmm. Well, my goodness, there are 50,000 troops still in Iraq. They're all combat troops. They're in Kuwait. They're in other parts of the region. Heavy ship presence in the Gulf, Air Force presence in the Gulf. It's very belligerent. It's very worrisome. When and if something can come, who knows? Very possible it could.
Back to Tehran now, and Mr. Marandi on this. When, of course, the West is accusing Iran over its nuclear program, especially during the last round of talks between Iran and the P5 plus one group, the issue of uranium enrichment was brought up. Now, a lot of reports are saying that what the West wants from Iran is a halt to uranium enrichment, and Iran's refusal to do so is what's causing the problem. Basically, would you say that that is a correct analysis of the situation in talks, and why? Basically, is Iran saying that it's not going to stop uranium enrichment?
Well, first of all, I think many people would now agree, many analysts would agree, that the issue really isn't the Iranian nuclear program, as a previous guest mentioned. The United States and the Western powers within the 5 plus 1, not China and Russia, which have now very different views from the Western governments in the talks. The Western countries are basically saying that the Iranians have to give up everything. In other words, they must capitulate. And even if Iran does capitulate, they are saying that the Iranians really will not get anything significant in return. In other words, the sanctions, the current sanctions, will stay in place. And this, of course, is shows that Western countries really are not serious at all in resolving the situation. In the past, when the Iranians and other countries, such as the Brazilians and the Turks, signed the Tehran Declaration, which itself, according to a letter from Obama to the Brazilian President and Turkish Prime Minister, in that letter he set a series of conditions in which he would accept an agreement, and the Tehran Declaration was signed within that broader framework. And immediately the U.S. President, despite signing the letter, rejected it. So the Iranians see the United States as both dishonest. It has a president that doesn't abide by his own word, and on the other hand, the United States is, and the West is, demanding capitulation and nothing in return. The Iranians, on the other hand, they're saying that we are working within the framework of international law, and they're under no circumstances will we appease the West and give up our own sovereignty. I think the Iranians also believe that Western countries are not in a position to initiate conflict. If they do, they would face very severe consequences. Western economies are rapidly on declining, and their rivals in Asia and elsewhere are gaining the upper hand. And the United States knows that its ships in the Persian Gulf are sitting ducks when it comes to Iranian missiles. The Iranian, the Persian Gulf is not very large. If missiles are fired at American naval ships, they will hit their targets very quickly. So there really isn't time for them to defend themselves, despite the fact that the Western media repeatedly tries to downplay Iran's military strength. I think the U.S. military knows quite well where Iran stands, and the American government knows how weak its economy is.
And because we're running out of time, and Stephen Lendman has just joined us, I'd like to give the concluding remarks to him. Stephen, when we are speaking about the increased pressure that Iran is facing, do you think that the United States, the West, is going to see the results that it's looking for by increasing pressure on Iran?
I don't think so at all. And I agree with what Mohammed said. I think the pressure will continue. Iran will not yield. Iran should not yield. The uranium program is perfectly legitimate. Again, this is not the issue. Whether it'll lead to belligerent confrontation, I don't know. I very much worry that at some point it will. But don't forget one thing. We're in electoral season in America. Everything is dictated by electoral politics. On the one hand, Obama doesn't want to look soft because the Republicans will take advantage of that and beat up on him. But does that mean he wants to start another war? What he could do, and what I suspect, is he will kick the can down the road. He will delay whatever plans may come until after the election. He can win it. He can lose it. Mm-hmm. If he loses it, it's somebody else's problem. But I very, very much doubt that he'll start a war before the election, and I don't see Israel doing anything without a green light from Washington. I don't think that green light is going to come in the next few months.
Okay, thank you very much. Stephen Benman, writer and radio host, joining us there on the line, rather live from Chicago. I'd also like to thank our guest in London, Mr. Jim Brann, with Stop the War Coalition. Thank you very much, Mr. Brann. And of course, here in Tehran, Mr. Mohammad Marandi, professor of the University of Tehran. Mr. Marandi, thank you so much for being with us. And thank you, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis from Mihoma Lezgi and the rest of the team. Until our next program, goodbye.